Welcome, True Believer readers, to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man, the best podcast to break down hard-hitting dialogue such as, "If stress can cause that, then this town must be run by Juan Valdez." Here to provide analysis of that line and so much more is my friend Eddie. How are you today, Eddie?
I'm feeling pretty good. I won my kickball game this last weekend, so good news in this household. Juan Valdez, this is a reference to coffee, right, James B.?
It's definitely him. I think he's got a sombrero or a burro with him or something.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, he's on the logo. I know they've changed the original Juan Valdez to somebody else after he's like, you know, 70 years old or something today. So.
Yes.
I don't know. I barely know anything about this. But something I do know about is that we're having some problems because the Inferno books are covering all Spectaculars and Web. They're all over the place. Boy, I'll tell you, I did a little bit of research, and it's unfortunate that Spider-Man even has to get involved in this. This is really an X-Men storyline that they just wanted to cross into Spider-Man with a very weak reason, and we'll come across that at some point. But we're going to do these books by month, so without further ado, from January of 1989...
Woohoo! New year!
Stan Lee presents Web of Spider-Man 46, The Power of... Hate, written and penciled by Richard Howell, inks by Keith Williams.
As Peter steps out of his car in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, he is immediately attacked by a man yelling,
"Hate outsiders! Kill them!"
The hostility continues when an explosion occurs, and an angry mob gathers outside Peter's hotel, only to be dispersed by Spider-Man. These disturbances are explained by Peter's handler as partiers that got out of hand. Despite these red flags, Peter gets up the next morning to do his interview for the local news station about his book. After the interview, Peter investigates and discovers a cult poisoning the water supply, driving people to hate outsiders and hate in general.
The drugs in the water supply weakens their immune system, which makes them more susceptible to hypnotic dancing, which brainwashes them.
Of course. Well, Hank Pym comes and finds an antidote, but is captured in the process. Spider-Man saves Hank from the culprit, Necra, a mutant that thrives off of hate. Necra escapes while Spider-Man uses his web shooters to spray the antidote at the confused townsfolk. Everyone is cured, and Hank Pym and Spider-Man reflect on how sad it is to hate.
One cured guy says, "How am I going to explain this to my Sunday school class?" Eddie, the brief appearances from the Vision and Scarlet Witch, combined with a Massachusetts locale and people irrationally hating others, reminded me of the Marvel team-up Salem Witch books.
I totally agree. Oh, those episodes were some of my favorite to record too, James B. This also feels like Richard Howell, who's the writer, is making a joke about Cape Cod and Massachusetts being angry and superstitious. The more places we see Peter go, the more we come to realize New York is always the best place to be.
And I do know that you enjoy those Marvel team-ups because I listen to Let's Read Spider-Man 200, the best of Marvel team-up, and I know you had that on your list.
It's true. Anytime I get to talk like Cotton Mather, it's a pretty good time.
I know a book that will never be on your best of list, and it's from January of 1989. Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man 311, Mysteries of the Dead, by Micheline and Todd McFarlane.
Oh, what a hyping for this one. Well, the stone lions in front of the New York Public Library have come to life. Spider-Man quickly shatters them. On his way home, he spots a mugging, only to have the building he's attached to come to life like a stone golem. The golem squashes and kills an innocent bystander who is attempting to help Spider-Man. Spider-Man tosses a car at it, collapsing it into a pile of rubble. Peter returns home seeking comfort from MJ as he's distraught after witnessing a helpful man killed. At ESU the next day, Peter has trouble concentrating and bumps into his friend Doc Connors. Connors says he would be happy to work with Peter, although he's feeling a bit lizardish lately. Let me note here that Dr. Swan is still employed by ESU, although it was proven in Amazing Spider-Man 310 that all of his academic credentials were forged. ESU continues to hire only the finest.
You know, one thing in this book that was good, MJ explains to Peter that Peter's the kind of person that would risk danger to help others, and that that bystander would have died even if Spider-Man wasn't there.
Oh. Well, later that night after that pep talk from MJ, Spider-Man returns to the scene of the murder and finds no evidence of the golem or the murder. He realizes it was an illusion and eventually finds Mysterio in an East Side warehouse. The fog of Mysterio dulls Spider-Man's senses, but he sees through the nightmares and breaks his fishbowl head. We end with Harry having a Green Goblin nightmare.
Yeah, Mysterio wanted Spider-Man to feel bad because it would shake his confidence and weaken him psychologically, which would help Mysterio defeat him.
I, for one, think it's good to see Mysterio. Unlike the Vulture, Mysterio, he seems to be able to adapt relatively well to the 80s. You know, the Vulture is, like, worried about preserving his legacy in a mausoleum and all this, selling his gambling dice that are rigged. But Mysterio's illusions, they still confuse Spider-Man just as they always have. It's got to be really fun to write him, too, because you can just go in any direction.
Oh, I so disagree. I know early James B. in these podcasts really liked Mysterio, but I'm so done with all these dream sequence slash hallucination stories.
Wow.
No. That's maybe you will like this book. I'm not a fan of it, and I don't even know why this is really part of the Inferno thing, because some of this stuff should be really happening, but in this book it was all dream sequency. Maybe it will happen in our next book, which is also from January of 1989. Stanley presents The Spectacular Spider-Man 146, Demon Knight, written by Jerry Conway and art by Sal Buscema.
MJ and Peter are doing great. Peter is back in school, and J. Jonah Jameson has paid him early. Too bad he is attacked by a duct on top of a building. This is like a vent that comes to life, a gutter, we could say. And it kind of looks like an eel with sharp teeth trying to bite Spider-Man. Strangely, the Spider-Sense doesn't ping when he's attacked. After destroying the pipe monster, we get progression of many other storylines. Joe Robbie's wife isn't happy with him because Joe thinks he should go to jail as an accomplice to a tombstone murder. Harry has moved his family into his father's old mansion on Long Island and is waking up from nightmares. The Hobgoblin looms outside Harry's house, waiting for him to lose his mind. At least 20 mid-level mobsters in the Kingpin's organization are murdered, setting a potential gang war into motion. Gloria Grant has been swept off her feet by a mystery man. And Christie is hanging out with MJ.
It's a great summary so far, Eddie.
Thank you.
There are a lot of unconnected stories. But the reason that this book is better than the previous ones is because the previous book was about poisoning some water supply and people yelling, you know, kill the outsiders, which was just very Marvel team up. I'm sorry. And then a big Mysterio dream sequence, which was very Spectacular Spider-Man-y.
Yes.
But this book here, this is the one that's really acting like the Amazing Spider-Man. The cover should have said, read a bunch of stories with all your favorite characters. But with the mystery man with Gloria Grant is a member of the Lobo family that the Kingpin has been battling. Don't forget about that storyline buried in before Inferno came along. Also, listeners, teenage cousin Christy is occupying MJ and Peter's apartment, which is very awkward for Peter.
It is awkward, James B. Christy showed up unannounced to MJ and Peter's apartment in the Spectacular Spider-Man 145, claiming her parents sent her to stay with them while they were in Europe. Also, Christy eats a lot. They cannot stop with this theme. And thinks Peter is cute, adding even more to the awkwardness. Peter meets a stressed-out Harry at an Osborne Chemical Corporation plant. As Harry seems unable to explain his apprehensions, Peter thinks of how Harry took his father's place as Green Goblin and grows nervous Harry will have a relapse. Suddenly, the plant comes to life and attacks everyone in it. Spidey saves Harry from metal pipes acting like tentacles. Leaving his destroyed plant and returning home, Harry looks into his bathroom mirror to see...
Oh,
the Green Goblin. Glad the writers are embracing the fact that Harry was the Green Goblin for a while.
Eddie, Inferno is covered in 39 books. I think 8 of them are Spider-Man books. I don't like metal pipes attacking people, but otherwise, this was a good story. Not only do we have a laundry list of characters, but the Green Goblin always makes any book worthwhile. I look forward to seeing him in the next book, which is from February of 1989. Stanley presents Web of Spider-Man 47, The Face in the Mirror, by Conway, Saviuk, and Keith Williams.
Hobgoblin is frantically searching through the remains of an Oscorp factory when Spider-Man attacks. In the midst of the skirmish, the factory rubble comes to life and snags Spidey. Hobby slips away before Spider-Man breaks loose.
Yeah, Hobby and Peter discuss the city's going crazy, and Hobby's just happy about it.
A dark cloud looms over Manhattan, causing inanimate objects to come aggressively to life. Spider-Man notes this as he heads to Aunt May's for dinner to meet MJ and her impetuous young cousin Kristy, who is temporarily living with them until Peter and MJ smudger off at Aunt May's house. Peter gets a call from Liz claiming Harry is going crazy, so he heads to Hicksville, Long Island. There, Spider-Man finds the Hobgoblin threatening Liz and Norman Jr., while Harry is going crazy looking for his Green Goblin costume.
Yeah, the Hobgoblin eventually gasses Spidey and presses Harry for the location of the ever-popular formula that makes all these goblin characters strong and crazy. Harry has no idea where it is, but he lies and tells Hobgoblin to check Harry's safe in his office downtown. As Hobby flies off with Spidey not far behind, Harry finally finds his Green Goblin garb.
Hey, James B., we got more Green Goblin. Let's see if he's in the next book, which is from February of 1989. Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man 312, The Goblin War, by Micheline and McFarlane.
Harry convinces himself he needs to be the Green Goblin and heads off to battle the Hobgoblin. The exciting battle shares real estate in this book with more Inferno stories of inanimate objects coming to life. We see this through the lens of Doc Connors at work, Mary Jane at her modeling shoot, and J. Jonah Jameson at the Bugle, to name a few. I continue to have mixed feelings, as Inferno allows you to see so many characters, but also wastes all this, as I say, real estate, with the printing press is alive, or the Statue of Liberty just snarled at a boat. Well, in the story I care about, Hobby crashes Peter into a water silo. Then the exciting ending comes as the Green Goblin gets the upper hand. He tells the Hobgoblin to get lost, and if he comes after Liz or Normie, that Harry will kill him. Spider-Man asks Harry if he wants to be a crime fighter, and he tells Spider-Man, I'm married, I have responsibilities.
I think it's incredibly ironic that it comes up now, because I think Peter has some of the best work-life superhero balance we've ever seen with him. Is anybody really angry at Peter right now? I don't think so. Is he broke? No. Is he overextending himself as Spider-Man? I would say no to all of those questions. The Peter of the 70s, though, would mope around about this comment for lots of books. Let's see how the 1989 Peter is in our next book. And it's from February of 1989. Stan Lee presents The Spectacular Spider-Man 147. When the Bugle Blows, written by Jerry Conway and art by Sal Buscema.
The Hobgoblin is annoyed. He recaps his 2-versus-1 defeat and laments he should have inherited his strength and stamina formula as the rightful heir, even though he stole everything. While MJ leads her modeling crew against one Inferno-based battle, J. Jonah Jameson leads his team against their own inanimate demons, while Joe Robbie fights a crazed mob, including a chainsaw-wielding freak. The Hobgoblin heads to the Empire State Building and tries to trade his soul for power, while Spider-Man heads to help J. Jonah Jameson at the Bugle. The Empire State Building's demon seemingly rejects Hobby's request, while J. Jonah Jameson tries to reject Spider-Man's help against a demon horde. When the dust settles, the demons are temporarily defeated, Spider-Man is badly hurt, and a terrified, dismayed hobgoblin wakes up blind in a strange land.
Doesn't this storyline feel a lot like Ghostbusters 1 and 2 with all these demons, the Empire State Building being taken over, all of Manhattan going crazy? We're going to get even more Ghostbuster motifs in the future. Thankfully, I really loved those two movies. Did you, James B.?
I don't remember loving them.
Really? I thought they were so great. I listened to that soundtrack, too, so many times with my cousins.
Did you happen to jump over to the internet and give us a year on these movies to see if how much they lined up with these books?
I think it, you know, I did. I think it was 85 and 87. So it would be right in the right spots.
Sure, sure. Eddie, we are less than 6 months from Halloween. So today's sponsor is an item that you need today. If you want to start heading out the doors for talking, I'll do the sponsor without you so you can go. You can start walking right now. Listeners, you may recall that the Green Goblin costume makes you crazy and the Hobgoblin costume makes you even crazier. What's that you say? Your friend is the Hobgoblin. No worries. You can never have too many Hobgoblins. Just ask Ned Leeds or Jason Philip McIndale or Flash Thompson or whoever we think the next Hobgoblin could be. Available at Eddie's favorite place for costumes and circus peanuts, Wawa. Mention the Let's Read Spider-Man podcast and receive free talking toaster with any purchase of $50 or more. Just say the word Inferno.
How can we pass it up if we get a free talking toaster? James B., thank you for bringing that sponsor to this podcast.
No problem.
Well, if you would like to discuss any one of these things, including our wonderful sponsor, you can email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media.
All right, listeners. I know that I'm usually yelling at Eddie in these podcasts, but we need to talk for a minute. You know, we've been together for 251 episodes. If you haven't figured some stuff out by now, you know.
It's a small-time production, could we say?
Exactly. I need someone to email me when there's a mistake on the show before I listen to it. 249 and 250 both had little mistakes in the first 30 seconds. How hard is it for one of our great listeners to go out there and just say, hey guys, at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or at letsreadspidey or and the Discord channel under the section called errors. Just say, hey, by the way, I noticed you had a fire sound effect at the beginning of the show that you forgot to delete, or I heard you guys talking at the beginning of the show. It was a nice effect, but no, we don't plan on talking over the intro. So guys, help us out.
This does bother you, James P. And that third person can be a community of people. Thank you, everyone.
Also, listeners, another thing is we never have a close ready. It's like the last thing we do all the time. We're always fighting over it. Like, you know, hey, you went ready to record? Oh, I can't record. You didn't write the close for this one. I didn't write the close for that one. Whatever you're about to hear, I promise you, we just wrote it like 2 minutes ago. And now it's time for the close. I'm James B., joined by
Eddie.
And remember, listeners, if you don't have the credentials for a job, get hired by ESU.
They won't even fire you if you get found out. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
James B., I used the term smudged to describe how MJ and Peter get Christy to stay with Aunt May. Do you recall a time in our teaching careers where I used this term?
No, I do not, but I can't wait to hear it.
So listeners may have known that James B. and I were in charge of recess in our last school often. And as much as I'm really not upset hearing about someone's favorite Pokemon cards for the entire half hour we might be at recess.
I know where this
if they are talking to me and I see James B., I walk towards James B. and the child is following me and I kind of walk like a half circle around him and the child gets stopped almost physically by James B. And instead of staying with me, They just keep talking about Pokeballs to the adult near them, and I wander off as James B. now is hearing all about Pokemon cards.